Welcome back to Chronology, an episode-by-episode recap of WWF's glory days, eventually when we get to them, and in the meantime, the early days of Monday Night Raw. This is episode 9. I am David Thackera. That is Neil Trama. Hi, Neil.
Oh, Dave, how are you today?
Well, I'd be better, but we don't need to get into that right now. Let's, in the great spirit of what I'm sure this episode was all about, let's just plow through this. Like, this is not, when they write the WWF history books, one of those episodes that everyone's going to concentrate on. So let's just give you a brief recap of what's happening in the world right now.
Yep.
It's episode 9.
Plow through it was a beautiful pun right there.
It's March 15th, 1993, and the Northeast of the United States is absolutely being demolished with a winter blizzard. Also, we've got Mark Scheifele and Paul Pogba, modern-day sports superstars, Scheifele from the Winnipeg Jets in the NHL, and Paul Pogba from Man United and France. They were actually born on this very date. Unfortunately, that was the same day the 29th president of Panama, Ricardo Arias, died. I know I don't need to remind you of that, but that wasn't the only bad thing that was happening in the world. Again, we're dealing with a blizzard, so instead of the Manhattan Center in Manhattan, Raw is coming to you live from the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York, which apparently just had a little bit of an easier travel path?
I don't know, because you know what, I thought that at first, but I'm tempted to say that this Raw was always going to be in Poughkeepsie, because how would they have gotten that many tickets sold and that many people into the building in a blizzard on that short of notice? So I'm tempted to say that I assumed actually that they anticipated the blizzard and they recorded this like days earlier, but a check of history at WWE.com actually does say it was a live show. So I'm not positive about that though. Either way, let's just say, yeah, we're in Poughkeepsie because of the blizzard. Most certainly because of the blizzard is why we have like no stars on this show. It was just whatever wrestlers could get into town, or I guess whoever happened to be doing the loop in upstate New York, when they were touring with the house shows. I don't know. It's a really, really skeleton crew there, including we don't even have Vince and Macho Man. So you can't even do your Macho Man outfit report today, which is the true tragedy.
But it was clear from the very beginning that this was not the varsity squad. This was JV. Now, I don't mean to take anything away from the lasting legacies of Bobby the Brain Heenan or Gorilla Monsoon, who were both pretty good on this episode.
Oh, yeah, they were the highlight for sure.
But they were being dragged down to the ground by our old nemesis, Rob Bartlett, doing a Vince McMahon impression throughout the entire show. Now, first of all, it was a bad Vince impression. Not going to grade him at any point on the impression itself. But if you're 9 episodes in, it's completely understandable if someone had never seen Raw before and they're tuning in to see this guy acting like a buffoon and parodying someone who you might not even know. So I know he was there to sort of be the comedic foil. But not only did this joke fall flat, it was an hour of a joke falling flat, and it wasn't even that good of a joke to begin with. Why are we still dealing with Rob Bartlett on these shows, Neil? Why?
Yeah, and that's the thing with Bartlett. I don't know why he's still around. I don't think he lasts too much longer. But that's the thing with Bartlett. You hit the nail on the head, is that I actually think the initial joke isn't that bad. Like when they do the intro to the show, like they always do, standing in front of the fans at ringside, and Bartlett's got the Vince McMahon stupid tuxedo on, and he's making the crazy facial expressions that we have noted before that Vince will do while Macho is saying something, the weird wide eyes and looking around. So in that, it's kind of an okay impression. And then when they go to him to talk, he just makes fun of Vince's, "It's Monday night, rah!" which is actually funny the first time he does it. The problem is that's the extent of his Vince McMahon impression. So for the rest of the show, basically all he does is occasionally chime in and go, "Monday Night Raw," which even so, maybe it was funny one or two more times, but an hour of it is pretty ridiculous, especially when you're talking about Vince, who is a very parodyable character. I don't know if that's a word, parodyable, but
it is,
you
now
can easily make fun of his, like, unbelievable, what a maneuver. There's so many funny things that Vince says on commentary all the time that you can make fun of. But I think the issue, you know, really is that Bartlett wasn't a wrestling fan. If you've been watching Vince for a decade doing commentary on these shows, which a longtime wrestling fan would have done. You could easily parody Vince. He just wasn't ready to do it. I mean, how do you really do an impression of a guy that you just met 2 weeks ago, you know, or 2 months ago, whatever it is?
Right.
I mean, it's both. I mean, it is his fault because he sucks, but it's also not his fault that he sucks because he's just totally out of his element. I mean, he's doing the best. I think he's doing the best he can, but it's just, it's not working. This is the time that the plug should have really just been pulled on Bartlett.
And maybe this was like a one final test because, again, we don't have our varsity squad there either because it's snowing, or they do reference the fact that they're across town at the Michael Landon Cancer Center fundraiser receiving or presenting, I don't know, a big check. And that's why Vince isn't there tonight. But it seems to me to be like, maybe if Vince isn't sitting next to him and concentrating on his stuff, maybe he actually got to watch the episode or watch it later on or just hear third hand that it was a total and utter disaster. And you're right. The plug will get pulled pretty soon. But we eventually, after we get through with those three, segue into our first match of the day with Razor Ramon against some guy named Russ Greenberg.
Yeah, typical Northeast jobber, Russ Greenberg. He pops up a lot on these Raws. Razor beats him pretty quick. I mean, we said this in the beginning. Guys, if you're listening, we're not going to have a lot to talk about these matches in this show because it really was nothing. They just threw matches out there to fill up a Raw because they only had like 10 guys in the building. So, I mean, it's a quick Razor squash. My favorite part was that we're like 3 minutes into the show and you can already hear the disdain in Gorilla Monsoon's voice talking about Rob Bartlett. And then him and Bobby just go on, you know, themselves making fun of the guy, which is the highlight of this show. I love Gorilla and Bobby. And Dave, I know you're not the longtime old school wrestling fan like I am, but you really do have to go back just because you're a fan of great comedy and see some of the glory days of Gorilla and Bobby on commentary and doing primetime wrestling, because they really are hilarious together. They were legitimately like super good friends, like best of friends off the air. You could just tell it shines through, and their characters are so great like throughout this show. It really is the only redeeming quality of this episode of Raw was listening to Gorilla and Bobby together on commentary for honestly one of the last times.
No, now you're bringing me down.
Yeah.
But as you said, it was a quick squash match. Razor did his thing, taunted the guy. And then we move on to match number two, an equally compelling match with Typhoon and someone named L.A. Gore, who, if you're listening in 2020 or later, and you have to be because we're recording this in 2021, L.A. Gore, Tiger King, separated at birth.
Really? And I mean, L.A. Gore also, I guess that's an Al Gore reference, I guess. I mean, okay. Nothing else about him screams Al Gore. Yeah, he definitely is more, oh gosh, what's the Tiger King guy's name even? Is it Joe something? Can't remember
Exotic.
His name. Joe Exotic, yes. He does look more Joe Exotic than Al Gore, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't get this. Typhoon kills him. I mean, Typhoon's winning a squash match here. I mean,
yeah, let me read you my notes from this match in its entirety. This, .. is not a good or compelling match.
Let me read you my notes on this match in its entirety. F*** this blizzard.
It was a squash match. Typhoon wins. No surprises there whatsoever. But after that, now we start to get into the really strange part of the episode. We've got Giant Gonzalez coming out for an interview. But first, we have technical difficulties. Or do we?
No, Bobby, we don't. I'm telling you. Tell everybody what happened first. And then I'll tell you.
We cut back to the arena. Bobby the Brain Heenan is in the middle of the ring with a microphone addressing the crowd, but he's not addressing the crowd so much as he's screaming at the technical personnel. And I honestly can't tell. Like, someone must have told him that he's on the air, and then they said, oh, no, hold on, you're not on the air yet. And he lights into this guy, like, am I on the air? And he's being super sarcastic of, am I on the air now? Can someone tell me? Can we get someone with a clue out here? And it was just, it was either Bobby the Brain Heenan being part of his character, which is rude, abrasive, all of these things, I'm better than you, or he was just being a dick. Like, I can't tell if it was a character thing or if Bobby was actually super frustrated with A, being in this show on this night, B, sitting next to Rob Bartlett all night, C, actually having some technical difficulties, or D, like, he just felt like screwing around and being a jerk to someone on staff.
No, I think this is, I point this out every week. they're intentionally, quote, screwing something up every week because they want people to watch this show and think, wow, it really is live. Because for years, wrestling shows have pretended to be live when they're taped. I'm telling you, that's what they're doing, because we had the week where the microphones didn't work. We have this on this show. There's been something almost every week where we watch it and think, wow, was that a screw up or did it really happen? I'm telling you, this is definitely this week's pretend screw up. And I also wonder if in the news, because I'm thinking of two famous incidents of this. There's the video of Chris Berman on ESPN flipping out at an assistant. And there's the really famous Casey Kasem dead dog thing where he's flipping out at the sound guy. Now, I know both of those things got popular in the YouTube era, but I wonder if those were known around this time in 1993, and that's why they did this to be kind of topical. Plus, it is in character for Bobby. He used to like yell at the camera guys on primetime a lot. So I think it was 100% intentional. Because Dave, think of it this way. You've worked professionally as a producer of a live radio morning show. If somebody on the show had started going off on, you know, some other worker at the station live on the air, would you leave the microphone open for 30 seconds? No, you would cut it off immediately, right?
I'd like to think that I would, but I can't make any promises.
If this was real, they wouldn't have shown it on television. They would have cut it off immediately. I mean, come on. This is all fake.
All right. Well, the point of the segment was that Bobby the Brain Heenan is bringing out the giant Gonzalez to the middle of the ring, along with his manager, Harvey Whippleman, who, this is to me a good point to just take a slight pause. And because the giant Gonzalez is not interesting at all, other than the fact that this is the first time in a long time I've actually seen him in context against other sized humans. And he is like actually like massive.
He's huge.
I know he's a giant. I get all of that. But like, it's still disconcerting to see him standing next to normal sized people. Yes, he is that big.
Yeah, I mean, he was a huge basketball center. They definitely put some lifts in his shoes to make him even taller. They paired him up with Harvey Whippleman, who's legitimately a tiny man. So, I mean, it really does, you know, make it seem even bigger than it is. But, I mean, he's legit a tall guy. Like, he towers over The Undertaker, who's legit, like, I think they bill him at 6'10", and I think he's probably legit, like, 6'7 or 6'8". So, I mean, this giant Gonzalez is tall. I mean, he's not, I think they bill him as 8 feet tall, which he's not, but he's a big dude.
All right. Well, that is the most interesting thing about the giant Gonzalez. Again, he's not carrying any matches. But tell me about Harvey Whippleman. Like, I know nothing about him at all other than he's small and weaselly and looks like a before picture, whereas Paul Heyman is the after picture.
Yeah, I mean, he was a manager. He's a mid-90s. Low-level WWF manager. I mean, that's his biggest claim to fame. There's not much else back to him, except what I will say is that he did have a job for many, 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 many years. He may even still be there, for all I know. His job in the Attitude Era, backstage, he was always like the gopher. Like in the middle of the afternoon when they'd be prepping the show and they would have an idea, hey, The Rock needs to bring out a guy in a chicken suit and a giant plate full of fried chicken. Harvey, go get it. And he would be in charge of running to find the chicken suit and the plate of chicken, or I don't know, whatever it would be. Whenever there was random things needed, or like say they were going to do a big backstage fight and, you know, for some weird reason there'd be like a stop sign there, they'd send Harvey out to the parking lot with a screwdriver to go pull the stop sign down. That was Harvey's job backstage in the glory days of the Attitude Era. And it really is the man's biggest claim to fame.
All right. Well, the promo came, the promo went, it wasn't good. But then they bring out a Hulk Hogan promo, and the thing that jumped out to me on this is they're selling Hulk Hogan and his appearance, the immortal Hulk Hogan, and his appearance in the upcoming WrestleMania 9. They're selling him as a four-time champion. Now, again, I know Hulk's reigns and the business was different and Hulk's reigns were super long back then, but it was just sort of jarring to watch this episode where Hulk Hogan, the biggest name in the industry, is a four-time champion. And now we've got like a roster full of people whose names I kind of barely recognize who are like 12-time champions.
Yeah, well, that's an indictment of this era of wrestling. I mean, in the 90s, a four-time champion is a ridiculously preposterous thing. Like I think the next, Bruno had two reigns. I don't know if anybody else up to this point had had two. I guess Randy Savage did. I guess they had started having some longer reigns. All right, I'm kind of talking out my ass here. Savage, Flair had two reigns. Warrior only had one. But still, being a four-time champion was a big deal. And it was just the way they needed to promote him as a big deal. I mean, they have no stars right now. Look at this WrestleMania. There's no big stars on this WrestleMania. It feels like there are because you think of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker as stars, but these guys never carried a pay-per-view before here at this point in 1993. So they had him try to make a big deal out of Hogan. So they did. This was preposterous, though. The Hogan doing the pose like he's a friggin' Greek god, or I guess maybe a Roman god. Maybe that's what it's supposed to be since it's at Caesar's Palace. But yeah.
Well, fair enough. The next match in a long line of bad matches was pretty bad, too. It's Papa Shango, and it's Bob Backlund, and it's not compelling, like, at all. And I wanted to like this match because I kind of like Papa Shango's character. I know it's not exactly a popular opinion to take, but I never hated it. I don't get Bob Backlund, and they come out to the ring, and we start out with a test of strength, which, I mean, this should be the first indicator that this match is going nowhere fast. And then we get Bob Backlund trying to fight out of a sleeper hold and, you know, the arm drops counting to three. And this match had nothing in it. And the commentary was even openly mocking, deriding, and advocating for Rob Bartlett to literally be killed. Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain wanted to send him to Jack Kevorkian. We're halfway through the episode. They've given up. Why are we still watching?
Yeah, this match was terrible. I'm not even going to talk about it. Let me just talk. I'll just give you a story from my personal life because I don't care about this match at all. You'll find this interesting. Anybody with kids out there. So I've got an 18-month-old daughter. And before we started recording the show, we were going to do this another time. And Dave had asked me why. And I had said that my wife had a really rough day and was exhausted and went to bed early. So that's why we couldn't record. Part of the reason she was exhausted is because my daughter has learned how to scream at the top of her lungs. She's learned the trick of just this loud, blood-curdling, screeching scream.
Oh, no.
Okay? It's not like a tantrumy scream, though, which is the thing. It's just like she discovered she could do it. It's just like another word she says. She can say mama, she can say dada, she can say Mickey, and she could say, ah! So she does this all the time just to get your attention. So, of course, we're trying not to encourage it, so we don't respond to it, but that just makes her do it more. So like she'll just look at a box of cookies and screech seven times, or she'll be watching Olaf on TV and want you to watch it with her, so she'll point at the TV screeching. So eventually you give in because this kid's screeching like seven times in a row, and then you think to yourself, well, next time we really can't give in. So the next time she does it like 14 times in a row. So basically that's why my wife is exhausted. That's why I'm going to be deaf. And it has nothing to do with anything with this episode of Raw. I just felt like telling the story because this match was so terrible. What happens next on the show, Dave?
We go to the WrestleMania report. Yay! And Mean Gene Okerlund is talking about the fact that this just in, it's going to be the world's largest toga party. Because that's a selling point for WrestleMania this year. We're going to have a toga party. It's nothing to
I'm
do with
that. I'm done with all this.
It's just the toga party thing. And nothing else interesting happens until we get to match number four. The Nasty Boys versus the Head Shrinkers. If we're going to rank them, this was the most compelling thing that was on this episode of Raw. And it wasn't horrible. Like, the Head Shrinkers, I've never seen a bad match that they're in. And before the match starts, there's an attractive Raw ring girl. And because of the nature of this episode, I started doing some math because my mind was not really into this. She's probably like 58, 60 right now. The ring girl, it's possible that her grandchildren are watching this now on Peacock or the WWE Network.
That is a scary, scary thing to think about, considering that I was a child watching this show live. But it really is. And this match, you know, this was like, it was fun. I don't know why on like such a throwaway show, they could have actually like done something good. They should have just sent them out there to have like a crazy 20-minute brawl. I mean, why the heck not? These right. Two teams actually were feuding. Like, they were doing matches around the house show. So I don't know why they didn't do that. They sort of did like the light version of that. And then they sent them to this super fake concession stand to have a food fight. Why not? Let's just end it with a food fight. Double count out. Whatever.
Yeah, it was it was a good match. The ending was a little bit of a smudge. I get it. But we're having a food fight right before a pre-taped package where they're talking about how the WWE is super philanthropic and helping to feed people all over the world as they're dumping mustard and wasting hot dogs. And
that's just funny. I didn't think of that, that they did the giant food fight where they waste all the food and then talk about how they're donating to hunger relief in Africa. Beautiful. Just beautiful.
So we have this video package about how great the WWF is. I'm imagining there's some sort of connection and reason why this happens, but do you know what it is, or are we just grasping at straws right now?
Well, I don't know why this aired as the main event of the show. I'll tell you that. I mean, they're airing video packages about how great they are. I've said this before, because Vince McMahon is under indictment for steroid distribution. So they're trying to paint the company in a positive light. So that's why they're so over the top with, look how nice we are. I mean, you know, that's great that they donated money to famine relief in Africa, that they helped the Special Olympics. But I mean, it's just, it's so shallow and self-serving, and it's the main event of the show. But hey, you know what? There was actually history in this segment, I think, because they acknowledge Vince McMahon as the owner and CEO of the company, which I never thought they did before 1997, 98 in the Attitude Era. They always just made him out to be the happy-go-lucky, you know, grandfatherly babyface announcer, but they actually acknowledge him as CEO of the company. So,
yeah, well, that's cool. All right. Well, that's it. That's episode 9 of WWE's Monday Night Raw. It's time to get to my favorite segment of the week. It's Let Me Ask You Something, where I ask Neil a question that's been on my mind while watching this episode. So, Neil, this week's question, when does Raw get good? I remember Raw being good. When does the changeover happen to when Raw stops being bad and starts being good?
Well, it depends on what changeover you talk about. I mean, it gets really good in 1997. But no, it's going to get good. It's going to get good in the spring. I promise it's going to get good in the spring. There's one particular episode in the spring that I know is really good, and then I know there's a bunch of really good ones around it. So I think that the spring and the summer are going to be really fun before we get into, like, kind of like some dredges again. But the spring is going to be fun. So stick with this. Although I guess this is probably a good time for me to say this to everyone listening. Stick with us and keep downloading us from wherever you're downloading it from. But we don't know when or if this podcast is going to have to go on hiatus, because as we're recording this here in 2021, the WWE Network is switching over to Peacock. And according to them, they plan on bringing all the archives over, except they're not going to all be there day one. So there is a chance that we're not going to be able to record podcasts until whenever they get around to uploading 1993 Raws to Peacock. And I'm trying to remember, I think when they first launched the network, they did upload them in chronological order. So hopefully they do that with Peacock again. But I know their biggest concern is uploading the stuff that they think the most people are going to watch. And while I certainly hope there's millions of Americans listening to this podcast and watching along with us, I'm pretty sure there's not. So it may be a while. Like, they may decide to start uploading these shows from, like, the Austin era on and then get back around to the old ones. So legitimately, this show could end up on hiatus for like a month. Or like a year. We really don't know, but they are promising to have the archives up by SummerSlam. So if this show disappears for 6 months, I don't know. I assume we'll pick it back up. Although that does kind of ruin our plan to review these shows exactly every week to the date that they aired. But we're going to do our best to keep bringing you chronology. And I think we've at least got a few more shows in us. We're going to stick with this at least through Mania 9, right, Dave? We've got like one or two shows to get there.
We have to, because it's some sort of penance for wrongdoings we've both committed in the past.
Yeah, maybe if it's like a few week hiatus, maybe we'll actually have to watch WrestleMania 9 and do like some bonus shows on WrestleMania 9 or something in the meantime. But we'll discuss that off air and figure out what we're going to do. We do have a show next week. My closing thoughts on this one are, I mean, there's really no point in closing thoughts. This was, you got to grade this show on a curve. It was a throwaway show with guys that happened to be in the building because there was a blizzard. So, I mean, whatever. It doesn't matter in the long run. I did like Gorilla and Bobby. Dave, who's your MVP?
My MVP is very clearly Gorilla Monsoon.
I'll side with you on that.
If you're going to say that we don't have Gorilla very much longer commenting after this, then it absolutely has to be Gorilla Monsoon as the MVP of this show.
Yeah, he'll host. I believe Gorilla ends up hosting a chunk of these shows in 94. So there will be a decent amount more of Gorilla. But Gorilla and Bobby as a team, I don't think we're going to see too many more times because Bobby's gone by November. Although I will tell you, spoiler, that when Bartlett is finally fired, they do replace him with Bobby Heenan. And it is not a coincidence that that's right around the time in the spring when I said the shows improve. So we'll look forward to that if we ever get to see them on Peacock.
All right. Well, what is next week's episode promoting, and where can people find us if they want to find us?
Well, Dave, do you remember next week's show?
I do. It's our practice show. Come back.
Yeah, I wonder if we should air the practice show. We actually have to watch this show again. Anyway, it's Kamala versus Doink in the main event. So look forward to that one. And then apparently the Bushwhackers have a match. And I did have to laugh because they also promote a Tatanka versus Repo Man match that I know because we watched this show a couple months ago. It doesn't end up happening. So I hope you're not too excited about Tatanka and Repo Man because I know that match is not on this show.
All right, where can we be found on the great expanse that is the internet?
Oh, place to be, wrestling feed. And of course, you could always just Google chronology. I discovered this is pretty cool, Dave. If I Google my name, Neil Trama, one of the top hits is a link to our chronology podcast.
Oh, so. Yay.
Apparently,
so Google Neil Trama.
Yeah, apparently, this show has already surpassed like 80% of my professional radio career. So there's that.
Fantastic. Well, we will see you very soon. I'm Dave Thackera. That is Neil Trama. And thank you for we wasted time and you wasted time for joining us on this episode of Chronology.
Take care.